Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host today, Dylan Barnes. We're back. It is September 1st. We are finally, we're in the last month of the baseball season now for the White Sox, at least, which is pretty crazy as we kind of gear up for this final month. September call-ups started today. So a lot of teams are adding two extra players onto their roster as rosters expand from 26 to 28. We have minor league seasons almost done, which is crazy that Winston and Kanapolis are about to be done here. And then, some potentially a playoff run for Birmingham here, which will be cool to see. And then Charlotte's got a couple more weeks past this, but the lower levels are just about wrapping up here in the next week. And then we will just kind of finish out our season and we'll head into an off season that we're thinking is going to be a pretty fascinating one for the White Sox here. But before we get into all of that, Dylan, how's it going, man?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back at home. I'm only up here for a few days. It was my mom's birthday and then Labor Day weekend. So I figured I'd stop in, catch a White Sox game with the rest of my family. But I will preface this. I am in line for Mizzou versus Kansas football tickets, and you have to claim them, and you only have 10 minutes to claim them. It's a very stupid system, and I hate it. So if you see me looking down at my phone, that's what I'm doing here in about 10 minutes. I'm not ignoring you. I'm still listening.
But no,
this is the biggest game of my college football career, so I gotta go to this.
Hey, you gotta lock in, man. Some things are important sometimes, especially in that world. Today we're gonna do a little bit of a variety. We're gonna talk the September call-ups off the top, a little bit of just roster decisions situation here. Fascinating, there was a whole debacle on White Sox social media last night when Mike Clevinger got pulled from a game, and people immediately started jumping into he's coming to Chicago. As of right now, Mike Clevinger is not in Chicago. Maybe he's on the way there still. I don't know. I don't really care about that storyline.
Yeah.
But in general, we're going to talk a little bit about just the pitching decisions. The situation with the Rule 5 draft is something that the rules have changed there in the last CBA with how Rule 5 operates, which puts the White Sox in a position where they've got a number of arms who are going to be Rule 5 eligible, which for those who don't know what that is, well, that means they need to be added to the 40-man to not be selected in the Rule 5 draft. Hence Shane Smith. You don't want to give up some of these guys for potentially nothing, right? The Brewers, they're fine. They'll be okay. But they lost Shane Smith for nothing because he wasn't protected in their 40-man going into the Rule 5. The White Sox have a number of guys that we think would pretty much be a lock to get taken in the Rule 5 if they're not added to the 40-man here, either at the end of this season or in the offseason, which leads us to the situation where we don't really see why they wouldn't be added now, because they're going to have to be in the offseason anyways to not lose them for nothing. So that's going to be one of our main kind of topics today. Then we're going to dive into just where we see the spots on this roster being locked up. When we go into the offseason, we're going to have a lot more detailed breakdowns of free agency, of potential trade targets, all that such stuff. But for now, we're just going to look at kind of which spots on this roster going into 2026, how many roster spots are locked, and at what positions is there going to be room to add or not. Then we'll wrap with a brief just go over of some of the guys who have performed really well in the month of August, because we're recording beginning of September, so we can look back at the whole month of August. That's a lot to talk about, Dylan. Let's dive into it. September call-ups. Frazier Ellard, Brian Ramos. Initial thoughts on those being the first two, at least. It could change. The first two guys added to the roster here.
I mean, I think both of those guys, you know, we've seen them before. You know, Ramos we saw last year, and Ellard we've seen up and down in stints this year. And like Ramos, it's going to be tough for him to carve out a role, just given how many new infielders the White Sox have gotten over the last 18, 16 months with, you know, Miguel Vargas, Curtis Meade recently. Lenin Sosa has carved out his spot as like a everyday second baseman, first baseman, whatever. And especially Colson Montgomery and Chase Mydroth. Like those two guys are playing probably his like his best positions of third. And I mean, he can maybe play second. So it's going to be tough for Ramos to get everyday playing time, which it sucks because I did really like him when he was coming up through the minors, like in 22 and 23. But it's going to be tough for him. And then with Ellard, I think that he's just another funky lefty that can get some guys out here and there. I think he's opening today's game, which is interesting.
I mean, MLB had Aaron Civale listed as a starting pitcher until about an hour ago, so that tells you the status of whoever is starting right now.
But I would guess it's probably like Bryce Wilson in a piggyback role.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but I would have preferred to see one of the guys not on the 40-man, like we'll talk about later. I would have preferred to see a Peyton Paulette, Tanner McDougal, even like if one of the new guys, Ben Peoples or Duncan David, like those guys are serviceable enough arms and they are intriguing enough for me to say, all right, give them a shot down the stretch here. You know, why not? So that's where I'm at. I'm fine with it, but I would have preferred to see you guys.
I think it's slightly like unfair to these two because I do think these two like deserve a roster spot. And I think that they deserve to get innings, but like you said, Ramos, like I just don't know where he's playing right now. You need to see more at bats the next month from, you know, obviously Colson, but then beyond Colson, you know, Vargas, Sosa, Mydroth, Meade, like you need to get a bat for those guys. Those are all guys you need more intel on. You need more experience from. Like, I don't know where you're finding a bat for Ramos. It's probably like, you know, a day or two a week at third, maybe a day a week at first, maybe a day a week at DH. It's probably kind of a mixture of like get him in a bat here and there. I don't think it does a ton for him. I don't know how much it does, but at the same time, he had a good month of August. He got really hot there late July into the beginning of August, and then it slowed down a bit of late, but it still had a much better last month or so. So I think it's fair to get him on the roster. Ellard, it's been a weird season for Ellard. You know, obviously he was in the bigs for a bit. He had an injury. He's been mostly in Charlotte as opposed to in the bigs. When he's been in the bigs, it's such a small sample, but like the stuff was pretty good, man. And like, honestly, you know, he, in his, whatever it was in 11 innings, or in seven innings at the big league level, it was 11 strikeouts and pretty good overall stuff from the left side. You know, he worked mostly, he's got this, you know, fastball, slider, change, sinker combo, and it's all kind of, you know, moving towards his, most of his stuff is pretty hard glove side, right? All other than the slider or arm side part, pardon me, from the left-handed side. So Ellard, like, I think he can still be a piece out of the bullpen, and at the very least, like a, you know, a depth bullpen guy, right? So I don't think it's a matter of like, he doesn't, I agree with your point. It'd be nice to see some other guys, but I'd rather see those other guys take other spots that we're going to talk about rather than take a net spot for Ellard, because I do think Ellard deserves some big league innings here to wrap out the year.
Yeah, and I totally get that. And I do think that Fraser Ellard could be, you know, that fifth, sixth inning guy out of the bullpen where, you know, all right, they've got two lefties up out of the three guys that are coming to the plate this inning. Here you go, Fraser Ellard. Like he's a very good lefty specialist, and I just like his energy. You know, spiking the rosin bag on the mound, that's fun. We need more guys with energy like that.
Mike Nassel type energy from last night. That was awesome.
Yeah, and apparently you can't do that because the White Sox are a bad team, so you can't show energy now. Yeah, so
I guess so.
That was dumb.
Yeah, that was an interesting dialogue going on there. But that brings us to our kind of point here of the pitching discussion. We've had a lot of conversations, you and myself and James Fox and Ian Eskridge. Like, we've been talking consistently about, like, when are we going to see some of these young pitchers? Because you look at the White Sox, and it's a funny little dynamic because going into the season, it was like, okay, there's so much exciting young pitching. There's so little to be happy about on the hitting side. There's a couple guys, there's a couple key guys, but, like, that's scary. At the beginning of the season, it was kind of, that was the reality, right? You were seeing more from the pitching, you were seeing from the hitting. since the All-Star break, it's been quite the opposite. We have seen a ton from the offense in the past month and a half, which is great to see. And that's really exciting that you're seeing development from, you know, obviously Colson has been incredible. He keeps hitting nukes every day. But then Teal has been very impressive. I think Kara has been very impressive. We've seen huge growth from Lenin Sosa, from Miguel Vargas, from a lot of these other guys. And you know, Mike Tauchman's been a, you know, a high level contributor for a veteran signing, right? Like there's been a lot of positives on the offensive side, especially the, you know, since the break. The pitching side has been ugly, honestly. It's been really ugly. And it's been ugly partially, I think, because they're holding guys back a little because they're trying to be patient, right? You still, Shane Smith is still, even after that little IL break just to get his body reset, he's looked good, honestly, his last handful of starts. You've got a lot of guys just filling innings at this point, honestly, and just kind of getting to the finish line. Martin Perez has been, I think the Sox might pick up Martin Perez's option for the record.
I think they do.
Why not? Like, honestly, I think there's a viable reason to have a vet like that who's been, he's like a two ERA or something. Like, he's been nasty. Besides those two, though, it's a lot of innings filling. Obviously, they just waived Savali, he goes to the Cubs, which is hilarious. And beyond that, it just is a lot of guys filling innings in the bullpen, in the rotation, just all the above. Yohandris Gomez has had some good moments, but he still probably is more of a depth piece, right? Davis Martin has struggled a bit in the second half. A lot of the bullpen has been really rough. So you look at it right now and you say, I see a lot of people jumping to this, like, the Sox need to add big pitchers. And, like, I think with this free agency class, there is a justifiable reason to add at least one or two big pitchers for sure, especially the relief side. The relief class is loaded this offseason. I 100% am behind adding a closer, not a bunch of random relievers, but a closer. I'm very down for. Even if you want to consider adding a starter, sure. But we need to remind everyone that there is a lot of pitching on the way and a lot of pitching that you have to figure out how to get onto this roster one way or another. So taking a step back, I mentioned this earlier, I kind of, you know, alluded to this, but the Rule 5 draft this offseason, the White Sox have five pitchers of noteworthy kind of, you know, put them on your note, like they, you know, these guys will be eligible for the Rule 5 if they're not added to the 40-man this offseason or in the next month. That means if you're going to be adding them to the 40-man, wouldn't you rather give a couple bullpen innings to a handful of young pitchers rather than some of the guys that we're seeing right now? First one up is Mason Adams. That you can put to the side. Mason Adams still recovering from Tommy John. Obviously, you're not going to add him to the 40-man until the offseason, potentially, right? Even if he's, you know, whatever. You don't need to deal with that. He's not going to pitch for the White Sox right now. He's still recovering from surgery. The next four guys are all actively pitching well, and are going to be Rule 5 eligible. Tanner McDougal in Birmingham, Shane Murphy in Birmingham, Tyler Schweitzer is down in Birmingham as well, and then Peyton Paulette in Charlotte right now. Those four are the other names we kind of have pinged clearly as guys that are Rule 5 eligible this offseason. And the White Sox don't really want to lose those guys for nothing. Where do you see, like who is your kind of, like, in your mind, like, the priority of what who you'd want to see in the big leagues in the next few weeks? Because I do think that a few of these guys at least are going to have to be added to the 40-man pretty obviously.
I think that it's sort of like a 1A and 1B for me with Tanner McDougal and Peyton Paulette, because those guys, they were high draft picks and they were highly touted coming out of the draft. And, you know, it hasn't been the cleanest of paths for either of them. You know, Paulette, he was drafted as a starter out of Arkansas. And, you know, now look at him. He's a bullpen guy, but now he's having the best season of his career so far. And then with Tanner McDougal, like, it's the same thing. Like, he underwent Tommy John. He had his struggles. The strikes weren't there. Now he's bouncing back, and he looks to be one of the three best pitching prospects in the White Sox system right now. And, you know, those two guys are absolutely deserving of a spot. And it's not even the fact that, like, oh, you know, I just want to see them up in the big leagues because they've been doing well in the minors. I don't think that there's anybody more deserving of roster spots, because if you're going to have to put them on the 40-man anyways, you're not burning a year of service on them. You're still keeping them eligible for if by some miracle Tanner McDougal goes off next year and wins Rookie of the Year, he'll still have the PPI pick, or not the PPI pick, because you'd have to be ranked and inside the top 100 on lists. But, like, there's avenues for both of them to be contributors on a good White Sox team, and I think that you should at least let them start to carve out a role right now rather than wait a full offseason to maybe give them an opening day spot. So that's where I kind of stand.
Yeah, so playing devil's advocate to our own point here, because I definitely agree with you on those points. I think one angle of it is, like, you could make the case that it's innings limit. It's trying to keep their arms healthy, trying to preserve them. In that case, I'm not sure why they're throwing still and not just getting shut down at the minor league level, right? McDougal, yeah, it's limited starts, but he's still throwing three inning games every week in Birmingham. So at that point, just let him throw, you know, 2 to 3 innings out of the bullpen in a given week for the White Sox, right? Like, I think it's, and then maybe the hesitancy there is like trying to not let them, you know, not take them out of their starter's routine. I know people have mentioned like, oh, you took Grant Taylor out of his routine and now he's been bad, which like, whatever, Grant Taylor's stuff is, all of his advanced metrics are still disgusting. So I'm not really worried about that aspect, but I think with that kind of angle, it's like, okay, maybe you're trying to just not mess up their innings plan or their just the plan for these guys and get them out of their flow. Paulette doesn't even fit in that though. Paulette's a reliever. Paulette has been moved to a full-time reliever. So it's not like you can even make the case that his innings are crazy high or that his, you know, you're changing his routine or anything like that. Like Paulette is going to be on the 40 man this offseason. He's going to have a chance to make a big league roster spot coming out of spring training next year. And he's good. Like he's just objectively better than multiple guys who are pitching in the White Sox bullpen right now. That's the one, honestly, for me, as much as I want to see Tanner at the big league level, I think that Paulette is the even more obvious one to me, just because he is a reliever. There are so many innings to be given away in that bullpen for guys that aren't performing. Then you take it down to Shane Murphy, and Shane Murphy's been, I believe Shane Murphy has the second highest qualified ERA in all of minor league baseball this year behind Jonah Tong. I was looking at that this morning. So literally the second best, you know, by ERA pitcher in minor league baseball this year behind a guy who just shoved in his big league debut. So that's a guy where it's like Shane Murphy, like maybe you're trying to, and I talked to him a few weeks ago and it was one of my favorite interviews we've done recently. And like, he knows who he is as a pitcher. Those types of guys are the guys that you want to see in the big leagues sooner than later, because then it's just like, okay, let's see how your stuff plays at the big league level. Right. And like, maybe they want to get Shane to Triple A still. Maybe they want to give him some time in Charlotte potentially. And if that's the case, fine. But like, he's another guy that I don't think you want to have be Rule 5 eligible in the offseason because he's having a heck of a season and you want that not being taken away for nothing. So even Murphy, like, let Murphy make a few spot starts, man. Let him make a few four-inning starts to, you know, from Chicago instead of whoever the heck is going to start some of these games other than, you know, the top few guys, right? So it's a tricky situation, and I understand the White Sox. It's not an easy spot to be in because you want to give guys experience. You want to gain that kind of next level. But at the same time, you're throwing guys out there every day who are not part of the future, who are not going to factor into this team when it is competitive. So just give some of these guys a shot because you're going to have to put them on the 40-man soon anyways.
Yeah, it really just makes no sense, especially considering the fact that you're getting a lot of pitchers back from Tommy John anyways. Right. So like the 40-man is going to get very clogged. So if you want to give these guys a chance to like prove themselves, be like, all right, you know, here's your chance. If you do well, you know, you're going to stick around. If not, then, you know, you might get DFA'd. So like you're getting Kai Bush back. You're getting Drew Thorpe back. You're getting Prelander Baroa back.
Mason Adams. So
exactly. Four. Mason Adams too. So like that's four guys right there that are taking roster spots and are likely should get roster spots and are taking them away from guys who, at least shouldn't be on the team next year. They can be on the team this year, but I there's no need for, you know, Cam Boozer on the team.
This is like, not a slight on anybody. We wish them all the best, but like when I look at this roster, when I look at the active roster right now, I'm not looking at the 40 man, and there's more guys on the 40 man you could probably remove from the 40 man that aren't even on the big league roster right now, right? Because there's a number of IL guys or guys that have been optioned that are technically on the 40 man still that don't need to be, frankly. That, you know, Tyler Gilbert fits in that category. There's some injured guys that are in that category, right? You've picked up a lot of random guys on waivers who could be in that category. But just on the active roster, I look at a Tyler Alexander. I look at a Cam Boozer. I look at definitely a Bryce Wilson. I think that's three for sure. I think you could make a case for Isard. Isard's underlying metrics are actually kind of nasty, which is funny. I know we've talked about that before, but it's weird how nasty his underlying stuff is, sort of. But in general, I think Alexander, I think Boozer, I think Wilson are at least three guys you can look at and say, okay, do you need to be on this roster right now or going into next season? He's on IL, right?
Yeah, but he's still on the 40
man. Yes. There, those three, at least in terms of active roster, when I look at that, it's like, can you DFA that guy tomorrow? And can you put a Paulette, a McDougal, or a Murphy on the roster and make the team better and also more, you know, logically tamed and targeted towards next year? Like, Yeah, I don't think I'm curious when that happens, if that happens at all. I think this team, like in general, they've been pretty aggressive this season. They've been willing to make these moves. They've leaned into this youth, which I love, and I'm happy that it's gotten to that direction. But I do feel like it's lacked a little on the pitching side compared to the hitting side, because the hitting side, like this lineup, you've brought up everybody pretty much, right? Like obviously, you know, Ramos just gets up now, but that's just kind of positional fit. Like they've handed the keys to Colson, to Caro, to Teal, to even bringing in a Curtis Meade, right? Tomelko's back on the roster now, you know, like all these things have happened. The pitching side, especially in the bullpen, I think there's still this hesitancy, and maybe there's some deeper reasoning to it. I get that there's a lot of factors in play here, but I would love to see at least one or two of those other guys we mentioned who are going to have to be added anyways this offseason get some big league innings here down the stretch.
Right, and I think the only like high profile name to debut from the White Sox system this year has been Grant Taylor. Am I forgetting somebody? Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. I mean, welcoming Gonzalez, but that's not medium profile. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, Shane Smith, obviously, but that was, you know, Rule 5. So that, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's, you know, in terms of the high profile. And I don't think we're seeing Schultz or Hagen at this point, right? I think, you know, both of them heading in a good direction. It was great to see Hagen have a nice start this week. That was awesome. Definitely his best start of the year, which is very encouraging. Okay. I don't think we're seeing those guys who at the beginning of the year, we were like, okay, maybe we're going to get these guys at the end. That's going to be amazing in September to see these guys come up. And if we're not going to get them, let's at least get these middle tier of pitching guys who are still good pitching prospects and get a taste of what they look like at the big league level for a few weeks. That's where I stand.
Yeah. I think we're sort of both in agreement right there with like, just see how they do. Like, I'm not asking them to like just hand over the keys immediately and say, all right, you know, we're going to give Tanner McDougal the ball and he's going to go seven innings and we're going to see where it goes. No, just give him three innings, like once a week, like he's doing in Birmingham. He doesn't need to be doing that in Birmingham. He went three perfect innings on Saturday. Like he's not challenged by Birmingham hitters. Like he's just not, like, and he's just bored. Like I don't see the reason for an arm like him to be in Birmingham.
It's funny you say bored, because so Aram was talking about Bubba Chandler on the call up this week, which is just baseball's prospect show for those who don't know. And he was like, I think it was Amor Jack that said, I don't know what Bubba Chandler was thinking in his brain when he came into spring training, competing for a spot, gets put down in AAA, is the best pitcher on the planet in minor league baseball for a month, and then still doesn't get a call. And he's like sitting there like, what am I doing here? And then he gets to a point where he starts seeing the results tail off 3-4 months later because he was in AAA for no reason. And the Pirates at the end of the day were trying to play the control game, right? And like, sure, so be it. But like, you see those numbers tick down for a guy like Bubba Chandler, who just simply deserved to be at big league level. And now we've seen him make two big league outings and hasn't given up a run. Right. Like, I mean, you know, I get being patient with guys, but in this context, when you know a guy has to go on the 40-man to not get taken away from you, the White Sox are not in any universe going to let a Tanner McDougal or a Peyton Blood even get taken in the Rule 5 draft. So let's just give him a couple innings. If it's once a week and they three innings of a piggyback, two innings of a piggyback, like, sure. It's just like, what does that not do at this point? So I am curious to see what happens. I think we'll see a couple more arms get their chance to debut here towards the end of the year. And if not, they're going to go into next year and they're still going to get added to the 40-man this offseason. And they'll still go into spring training competing for a roster spot either way. But I think a nice little cameo for a few weeks makes sense for a number of these guys.
Yeah, I just hope that we can see somebody like Sean Burke last year, a Jairo Iriarte. Those guys were like, they have solid ends of the years after being called up and, you know, they carve out a name for themselves. You know, obviously Iriarte didn't have the season that he wanted this year, but like Sean Burke, he earned himself a spot to be the opening day starter because of the strong 3 weeks he had at the end of last year. And I can very easily see a guy like Tanner McDougal carving out a name for himself that way too. So I'm hoping that we see somebody just come out of nowhere and be a guy over the last month of the season.
I'm with you, man. That shifts us perfectly into this next segment of just talking about which roster spots going into next year are locked up, because all these guys we're talking about, exciting, talented, but far from locks to be on the roster, right? You got to put them on the 40 man, maybe, sure. Far from a lock to be a major league roster spot next season. Heading into this, you know, upcoming season, when you look at the 40-man, when you look at the roster in Charlotte, even when you look at the Birmingham roster as well, where, like, what I want to try and think through is, like, how many roster spots are locked up? You want to start on the pitching side or the hitting side? Because I got my notes here prepped. I'm good to go either direction to start here.
I feel like hitting is the good starter.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to start. All right, let's think through it. Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, locked. That is 100% two catchers. Maybe they continue to run a three-catcher team with Corey Lee because of it.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I don't hate it. If that means committing to Teal and Caro playing almost every day, I would be okay giving a bench spot to Corey Lee, partially also because Corey Lee is a little more athletic, a little bit more versatile than your average backup catcher. Corey Lee played some outfield earlier in his life. He's also played some first base earlier in his life. If Corey Lee can be a if needed backup in other parts of the field other than catching, then maybe that's a logical decision to have Corey Lee on the lineup. For now, the locks are Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal. I'm fired up about the catching duo of Chicago. I think these two are both going to be really, really good big league players. And you know, the White Sox, everybody who knows and listens to this show knows the White Sox pitching or catching in the past while has not been very fun, other than the one legacy Yasmani Grandal like half the season. But you know, other than that, it hasn't been fun. It is fun now. These two are going to be on the roster. And going into the infield, it's Colson Montgomery for sure. Obviously, that is after what he's doing. It's silly. He's going to be on the roster. That's for sure. I think Miguel Vargas is a lock to be on the roster heading into the season. I think, is there another lock?
I kind of think that's it for in terms of locks.
Kind of where I'm at too, to be honest, which is interesting because there's a lot of options, but like locked into a starting spot, it's kind of those two, I would say.
Yeah, because I just don't think that there's something that, like, exceptional that Chase Meidroth does that a Sam Antonacci can't do. Like, if you told me right now that Sam Antonacci won the starting second baseman job for the White Sox out of spring training next year, I can kind of see it. Like, I could very easily see him just tearing the cover off the ball in spring training, and the organization is just like, all right, why not?
No,
I can kind of see it.
There's a world. I don't quite see that, but I do think it's possible.
I don't think it's going to happen, but Meidroth, if you told me, I
think Meidroth and Sosa are both like borderline locks in my head, just because you can Meidroth, you can move around. He can be your bench. At the worst case, right? If he gets beaten out for a starting spot, he can be your bench infielder, and you feel very good about that. Sosa, I think, because the bat has been so good, it's hard to say he's not a lock. I also think he could get traded though. So then it's like that becomes an interesting dynamic there, right? But I think if he's in the organization still, I would put Sosa in that lock category just because from the bat perspective, he's proven that his bat is a big league bat this season, which is great. But I do think the only like locked starters are Colson and Vargas. And even them being locked starters, it's not even exactly a direct lock because Colson, hypothetically, I think Colson's your starting shortstop. Like, I don't think they're moving him off shortstop right now. But then Vargas could be your starter at first or third or a combination of both, depending on the rest of the roster. But I think those are the two locked starting infielders. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's – I think they probably stick on the corners, but I could be wrong. I think Colson is third base, Vargas is first base. But
you think it's that?
I think so. I still think so. I could be wrong.
I think for next year, I still think it's Colson at short. I think
I could see that too.
Bring someone in. I don't think it's Meidroth or Brooks or anybody else pushing or Jake. You know, I don't think there's anybody pushing Colson off short. So I think they're going to give him at least next season to remain the shortstop, and then from there you could push him to third if you want to.
That's fair.
I still think it's Colson at short and Vargas at one of the corners or a combination of both corners. Probably.
That makes sense. I was thinking like in terms of way in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. But those are the two guys that are locked. So as much as there's a lot of options for the rest of the infield, we talked about this last time a few weeks ago, like there's still room to add an infielder, and there's still room to add particularly a corner infielder. Because if you're going to be playing Colson at short and you have a variety of guys that play second, you have a variety of guys that could play third, right? If you have the option to add a corner, add an impact corner, and have Vargas play the other corner, dependent on whoever that added corner may be. But I still think those are the two guys you can pencil in, which gives you, you know, you either fill out the last two spots with all these other guys we've mentioned, in addition to some guys coming up, Jacob Gonzalez, Sam Antonacci, et cetera, or you add a piece, and then you have one spot to fill in with all those guys, which would breed even more competition, but it's not always a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that there's a world where, you know, a Ryan O'Hearn is like a perfect candidate for a spot, because then, you know, you shift Vargas back to third, Colson sticks at short, and then, you know, you just mix and match second base. Maybe it's Lenin Sosa, maybe it's Chase Meidroth, maybe it's another outside signing. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But like, I think a corner infielder is probably the best way to fit everything together, because if you sign one, then you sort of can, that one piece of the puzzle fits in perfectly, and then you can
right
essentially just do a ring around the rosy of like, all right, Vargas, you're not playing first, you're going to third. Colson, you're not playing third, you're going to short. And then
right,
yeah, it goes from yep. there.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Shifting into the outfield, where the outfield gets interesting is the fact that, like, you hypothetically could see a trade of any of the outfielders, any of the three starting outfielders at least. And I do think there's a very good chance you see one of the three of them traded this offseason, which creates an interesting dynamic. Assuming no trades, I think Robert, Benintendi, and Tauchman would all be locks at that point. I do think there's a world one of them gets traded. Would you say, you know, if you're taking like over under 50% of like one of them get traded, where is your brain at with that one?
I think that I would have to say over 50%. I think I would put odds at like 65% that at least one of them gets traded. Cause like, yeah. I know that Chris Getz has said, you know, we're committed to Luis Robert for 2026 and beyond. I think that just means that they're picking up his option. I don't think there was ever a question in the world that they were going to decline the option after not trading him. But if some team comes calling for him and they give you what you want, I think that you take it. And same thing goes for Mike Tauchman. You know, there were reasons why he didn't get traded at the deadline. And, you know, he absolutely played like somebody who was worthy of a trade to a contending team, especially left-handed veteran outfielder. Every team needs that.
Right. So maybe it's a platoon, right? Maybe somebody
platoon
next year, you know?
Yeah, I could very easily see somebody asking for Mike Tauchman and maybe even Andrew Benintendi too. Cause like you put a pitcher with him, put Lenin Sosa with him. I think you can, I don't even want to say get off of that deal because it's really like not that much money the farther away you get from signing it. But I think that you can trade it. It's not so much of a negative asset as it once was, especially considering, I mean, it's what, 2 years after this? It's 26 and 27, I believe.
Yeah.
So I could see it being traded. I think he's the least likely of the three, but I think that one of the three gets traded.
Yeah, I think that could happen for sure. And if not, I think they're all locks, obviously. I mean, working on the assumption that there isn't trades, I think that we look at those three as the three locks in the outfield, and then you have another option beyond that. What about Brooks Baldwin, man? I'm curious your thoughts on this, because I don't think he's a lock, but I think from a fit, a positional, and all that kind of just consideration put into it, I could see the reasoning behind Brooks being like a borderline lock. I mean, it's an almost 800 OPS in the month of August coming off of it. He's shown the ability, and I think will continue to get better in the outfield. He can still be a backup infielder if you need him to be, right? Even with all the depth in the infield, right? It's not a lock, but like I would have Brooks Baldwin on my opening day roster on the angle of versatility, switch hitting, and the continual development of the bat, which has looked really good the past month or two.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what I would do. I mean, outside of Edgar Caro, he's the only switch hitter on the active roster right now, and he's the only player that I would trust playing both infield and outfield. Like, right. That's something that you can't exactly pull somebody off the street and say, all right, you're playing all seven positions that are not pitcher and catcher. So Brooks Baldwin can do that, and I think that's what he's best used for, is like that versatile – I don't want to say Leury Garcia type, but like he can play anywhere on the field, and he's at his best when he's playing everywhere. So I think that he's definitely earned a spot on the 2026 roster, only because like he hasn't been glaringly bad on either side of the ball. Yeah. So, with that versatility comes just even more opportunities.
I'm with you. I think that there's a really good case to be made for Baldwin to be on the opening day roster. I wouldn't put him quite in the lock category, but I think he's right. Probably in the similar bucket as like a Mydroth, where like they should be on the roster, barring anything, you know, changing or anything really adjusting. But I do think there's a very good chance. So we talked through that, right? We've got two catchers, we've got two infielders, we've got three outfielders. That's at least seven players that we consider to be locks, barring trade. And then we've got three more, I think, in Mydroth, Sosa, and Baldwin that we would definitely lean yes on going into the season. Beyond that, you've still got Curtis Mead. You've still got Brian Ramos. You've still got Corey Lee. You've got, I mean, Taylor should be gone, I expect. Will Robertson is a potential to make the last outfield spot, maybe. So definitely some possibilities there. But, you know, right now we're at 10 guys that we think are very likely to be on the roster. Some room to add, man. There's some room to add, even with guys on the way. There's definitely some room to add and create some competition among the rest of these guys to try and get a roster spot. But also, you know, you could fill two or three spots in free agency and feel pretty good about it with the rest of the guys that we are kind of penciling into this offense.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the pitching side is where it gets really fun, because there's a whole lot up in the air, but it would not surprise me if guys came out of the woodworks and grabbed spots in these last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, so starting with the rotation, like who is a lock? I mean, Shane Smith is a lock.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's another lock, to be honest.
I don't think there is either, because I think I could see any of Sean Burke, Jonathan Cannon, Davis Martin, I could see any of them get traded. I could see a lot of teams having interest on those three guys as like a back end of the rotation starter for a contending team.
Right.
But I could also see the White Sox being like, all right, we're going to send Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon down to limit their innings so that they can stay healthy for next year. So that leads me to believe that they want to keep Burke and Cannon around. But then Martin is sort of the odd man out there. So I think that I would say Shane Smith is the only lock right now in terms of rotation spot, but I would not say that Sean Burke or Jonathan Cannon are castaways right now. I think that similarly to the outfield situation, I could see any of the three getting traded, but I think that a Davis Martin trade is the most likely, just because he's the oldest and I don't want to say he's the most replaceable, but like, his stuff isn't otherworldly. I love Davis Martin. Great dude. But I feel like he could very easily just be, all right, swap for Noah Schultz, swap for Hagen Smith whenever he's ready. So I think Shane Smith is the only lock right now.
Yeah, Shane Smith is the only one I see as a lock. I would agree with you on that. I think Burke would probably have the track over Cannon if it comes down to one of those two, just because I think you have a lot more intrigue and upside there. But I do think both those guys are very much in the mix. I agree Smith is the only lock. I think Martin Perez might be the second closest to a lock, though, honestly. If his option is picked up, which it's a $10 million option, so it's double his current salary, which I realized when I was looking at it recently that it's $10 million rather than the $5 million he was paid this year. So that's not a cheap price. I think there's some guys you could look at in free agency and say, okay, maybe that player's a tick above a Martin Perez, but like the fact that he's in the clubhouse, it's a mutual option. The team knows him. He's still only 35 going into next season. Like, I think it's pretty, and it's a $1.5 million buyout too. So you're either paying $1.5 million not to keep Martin Perez, or you're paying $10 million to keep Martin Perez and have a veteran who has had a really good season in your rotation. Yeah. He's also hasn't thrown a ton this season because of the injury. So going into next year, he hypothetically could be a guy that you're looking at as, you know, being able to give you even more innings, right? Maybe that's what it is. I mean, Martin Perez is kind of fits in that Jose Quintana bucket in my brain, where he's like one of those guys who will always get underappreciated, but is shoving, honestly. Like, he really is. He was the only guy that didn't get, you know, the Yankees lineup was on fire the past week or two, and he held them in check and won a game, right? So, you know, I think that Martin Perez is the other guy I would be looking at as probably the second closest, but the only real lock in that rotation is probably Shane Smith at this current point, depending on the way things go with free agency, with prospects. Obviously, we talked about McDougal already. We talked about the return of Mason Adams, Drew Thorpe come, you know, probably May or June next season. Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, Shane Murphy. The list goes on and on. There's options. And I still think there's a chance they add a starter in free agency as well.
Yeah, I going back to Martin Perez, I think that when you look at his track record, I think that he can get back on track next year, because the last four full seasons of him, it's 115 innings, 200 innings in 2022, 140 in 2023, 135 in 2024. And then, you know, obviously he has the injury this year and he goes down. But like, in terms of ERA, he's got a 2.16 ERA right now through 41 and two-thirds innings. I mean, I think that he's sort of earned a spot. If he wants to come back and the White Sox wanted to pick up the option for $10 million, I think I'd do that, because when you get a lefty who's a good clubhouse presence, who can throw you a ton of innings and also like post good numbers, like he's not going to throw to a 2.2 ERA for 160 innings next year. But like, if he throws to a 3.5, a 3.8, that is amazing, especially for he would be 35-year-old. Like, sign me up for that. So, and then I think that of the guys that are coming off Tommy John, I think I would have to say Thorpe, it would be like the closest to the big league, just because he's the only one that's debuted.
Yeah.
Maybe Bush, but I think Thorpe maybe.
But I also don't think any of those guys are going to, I don't think any of those guys will break camp in the rotation. I think they don't.
Yeah, no. I'm saying like for like May and June.
Right. Yeah. Which becomes interesting, but I think that you figure out how to fit all those pieces. But I think when you look at it, there's a lot of guys that are going to be competing for spots, and Shane Smith is probably the only one that we can for sure pencil in the opening day, you know, probably the opening day starter and in that rotation, at least to start the year. So that's going to be interesting for sure. Flip it. And then also the possibility of who I was about to say in the bullpen side, there's still a world where Grant Taylor comes out of spring training as a starter.
Yeah.
There's a world. I don't think anybody, maybe a couple people, when the idea was floated of Garrett Crochet starting last winter, I'm not sure, two winters ago, I guess. I'm not sure anybody was like, yeah, Garrett Crochet. I didn't think so. I was like, okay, sure, they're saying this now, but he's probably going to end up in the bullpen. Like, whatever. Right. Opening day starter is competing for a Cy Young right now in his second season as a starting pitcher, right? So, like, you never know. Some of these guys that are freak athletes and super ridiculous talents, like Grant Taylor, could come into spring training and all of a sudden the White Sox are like, yeah, he's going to be with the starters. And that's in February. And then in March, they're like, oh, he's competing for a rotation spot. And then, oh, here's, you know, March 26th comes around and Grant Taylor is starting the second game of the season. Like, that's possible. So there's a world.
I'm up for that. That sounds great.
I mean, I don't think so quite yet. I think that's probably more of a 27 project, but it's possible for sure. So going there to the bullpen, for now, Grant Taylor, we're going to say, is still a reliever. Yeah. He's the first lock in my mind. Mike Vassell is 100% a lock. Mike Vassell is a dog, and he has proven that he's going to be a Swiss Army bullpen guy for the White Sox. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. I think Stephen Wilson is just about a lock, I would say. I think Stephen Wilson's proven his, unless he's traded, right? Obviously, we're kind of, you know, hypothetical trade potentially, but I think Stephen Wilson has proven to be a veteran piece of this bullpen. I don't want Stephen Wilson as an eighth or ninth inning guy, but I think Stephen Wilson, if he's your one of your good mid relievers, you feel solid about that.
Right.
That's kind of all I got in the terms of a lock. I mean, who else are you thinking? Because those are the only three where I'm like locked.
I know that he's had his struggles this year, but I still believe in Jordan Leisure to be a serviceable seventh or eighth inning guy. Like, he's had his struggles this year. He's dealt with home run problems, and, you know, he can nibble around the strike zone and not get whiffs. But, like, when he's on, like, he's a very, very good reliever. And I think we've seen that for flashes this year. And I think that he's, like, he's a splitter away from being very good in my eyes.
He's been working on the splitter. So exactly. I would agree. I would frame it from the stance of, like, if he comes into spring training throwing a splitter 12 to 15% of the time instead of 2% of the time, I could put him as in that walk, because it is like an outlier type of, you know, two pitch arsenal when he's at his best. He's not always at his best, but when he's at his best, it's really good. I mean, he's running a 30% strikeout rate. He's running a 31% whiff rate this season. Expected batting average against him is 198. You know, there's a lot of good things there. It just has been a lack of command sometimes, where he either misses badly and he walks guys, or he just leaves fastballs down the middle and they just get pummeled, which is going to happen when you leave fastballs down the middle. But I do think there's a lot to still like there with Leisure. I've seen way too much slander compared to some of these other guys on the bullpen of Leisure. Like, I still think he's a way more interesting person to have in the bullpen than a number of other guys on the roster. With that said, I don't know if I'm putting him in lock, just because I think there's a lot of guys, whether it be starters moving to the bullpen or bullpen guys in the minors that are going to push for spots. And just the fact that he has had his struggles this year, but I think that's probably the closest to a fourth lock, I would say, in that bullpen.
I would tend to agree, but I think that when you look at the rest of the bullpen, there's not really anybody who I'm like, all right, yeah, you know, you've earned a spot on the on the 2026 opening day roster. Maybe you could say Brandon Isert, because he's been good. Like, the underlying metrics on Brandon Isert have been good. And then outside of him, Tyler Alexander, not really. Cam Boozer, probably not. Wilkelvin Gonzalez.
I mean, you'd want him to take a step in the next month. If he shoves the next month and he gets actual innings, because he really just hasn't gotten innings yet. Like, he's been decent in the innings he's gotten. He just hasn't got actually. Yeah. I mean, it's nine innings of, or 12 innings of pretty good ball, right? It's been solid, but we just haven't seen enough from him. So I think for him, you got to just see a little more. But, you know, he's been up now for he's been up again for a number of games, I think, right? He got recalled, and he got called and he was optioned again. But it's been, I mean, he's made five appearances now in August or six appearances in August of seven runs, three hits, one earned run, seven strikeouts. So I think Gonzalez with a really good month could push towards that, but I definitely wouldn't put him in lock just yet.
Yeah. And then outside of those guys, you've got, I'm going through guys on the 40 man, not even that are active. Dan Altavilla, probably not.
No,
I would very tentatively call Pralander Barroa a lock.
But he's not going to – he won't be right start of the season. So I'm thinking
– okay, yeah. If we're talking start of the season.
When he's back, yes, I think he'll be in the when he's right, he's disgusting, honestly.
Yes.
There's a world where he establishes himself as a setup guy next year if things go well off Tommy John. But, surgery.
Miguel Castro, probably not. I mean, he's come off a torn patellar tendon in his right knee.
Nope.
I don't really think so. Elvis Peguero. I could see him sticking around, maybe.
Nowhere near a lock.
If we're talking locks. Yeah. Owen White, no. Jairo Iriarte, no. Brian Hudson, no. Tyler Gilbert, no. Frazier Ellard, no.
I think it's pretty safe to say that it's for sure Taylor Vassell and Steven Wilson, and then Leisure as that, like, should be fourth, I think, in both of our eyes, but things could change depending on who gets added, depending on who comes up from the minors. Like, that could change, but I think those four is at least a good place to start. But it's funny, we talk about all this, and, like, when you really boil it down, we only named five pitchers that we think are actual marks to be on this roster. So while there's a lot of options, there's a lot of things in the air with this pitching staff and a lot of time between now and then. And that's another reason why we want to see guys in this next month, just see what they have, because there's a lot to figure out. You're going to have 13 pitchers next season, and we only have five on the top of our, you know, from our perspective, that we think are actually locks to be on the roster. There's a lot that can happen between now and March, of course, but, like, that's a ton of competition for seven to eight spots on the roster on the pitching side.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to see a lot of guys debut next year for the White Sox, because there are a lot of guys that are close to the majors and are they've earned a spot. Like they've earned a shot to go out and compete at the big league level. You know, we talked about Peyton Paulette and Tanner McDougal and Shane Murphy and Tyler Schweitzer. And like those guys could be in the bullpen or in the starting rotation for the 2026 White Sox next year. So right. Like there's a lot of high level arm talent that is close to the big leagues that it's going to come up in the next 12-ish months, and it's going to be really fun when it all clicks. The White Sox pitching is going to be very good, and yeah. I can't wait for that day.
And it's not as bad as the last month may indicate for everyone that's been yeah. looking at the pitching and saying, oh my God, the pitching's so terrible. Like, there's plenty of arms on the way. There's still room to add. I think we've talked about this, and we'll talk about, yep. we'll do a whole free agency breakdown sometime soon, but there's a ridiculous crop of relief pitchers in free agency this season. So that, I think, adding a true stud bullpen guy is a priority for sure. And even a starter, if you don't feel confident in a lot of these young guys, especially guys coming off injury, guys coming up in the minors, like if you still want one more dog, like you could find a dog in free agency this year if you want another, you know, potential veteran starter to add to these young guys. So there's ways to go about it, but there's a lot of arms who are going to have a chance to be a big piece on this roster. We'll finish out by talking through just some basic top performers of August. Really, for me, it's just a number of guys. There's not anybody in Charlotte that I had particularly pinpointed. I'm not sure if you have anybody, but I didn't really have anything from the Charlotte side of things. So hopping into Birmingham, we don't have to dive too deep into guys, just kind of just to give people a perspective on like who was showing out in the past month of minor league baseball for the White Sox organization. The pitching side. Talked about a couple of these guys already. Shane Murphy, Tyler Schweitzer, and then Riley Gowans. Those three have been sharp in Birmingham, and they are a huge part of why Birmingham is about to, you know, potentially go on a run here to try and win their second Southern League championship in a row. They have been really, really good. Gowans is a guy that always is like sneaky good, and I feel like doesn't yeah. get quite enough attention because he's not, you know, a lower level prospect, not a higher pedigree guy, but has just been good. Like his last four starts, it's 17 and two thirds of, you know, 2.5 ERA ball, 21 strikeouts in that span. He's cut the walk rate down in this last month or two of the season. Been very good. Shane Murphy just continuing to dominate. His last five starts in August was 1.44 ERA. His season ERA is like 1.5 something. It's really ridiculous, the numbers he's put up this year. And then Tyler Schweitzer, since getting demoted to Birmingham just for a little reset after his first stint in Charlotte, his last five outings over the past month, five outings, 21 innings of no run ball for Schweitzer in that span. So three guys that are just shoving at the Birmingham.
Yeah, Gowans in August, it was 24 and two-thirds innings, a 2.19 ERA, 27 strikeouts to 9 walks, and 2 homers in that month. Like, Riley Gowans is, like, I'm not sure where he fits in to, like, a potential top 30 just because he's 25, he's going to be 26 in October. Right. But, like, does he look like the best piece in that Aaron Bummer trade? Like in terms of
Because is anybody even in the organization left from that trade?
I don't think so. I think because Schuster got claimed by the A's.
Right.
Lopez left.
Shoemake is gone.
Soroka, Shoemake.
He's the only guy left in the organization from that trade. So hey, the throw-in draft pick from that trade is turning out to be a pretty good double A pitcher right now. So we'll see if he can keep going. But that trio has just been excellent there in Birmingham. Yeah. On the hitting side in Birmingham, the guy to mention is Brady Montgomery for sure. It has been a really, really nice handful of weeks here for Montgomery. It's great to see him get on track after that little bit of a slump there in Birmingham in July, I want to say. Brady Montgomery's been great in the month of August for Brady Montgomery. Let me pull up my – I don't even have it here unless you have it.
But, I have it. 323 batting average, 404 on base, 490 OP – or slugging for an 894 OPS. In August, he had 13 doubles.
That's
13 doubles to only one homer, which is pretty crazy. But like the over the fence power is there. He just gotta elevate a bit more. And then the good thing for me was this was his best month in terms of strikeout to walk ratio. It was 25 strikeouts to 11 walks. That's his best month above Kannapolis this year. So in Winston, it was 26 to 12, 20 to 6 strikeouts to walks. And then in July, it was 31 strikeouts to 13 walks. So like it was a very good month for Braden Montgomery. And dare I say, it wasn't even the best month from a White Sox hitting prospect because Haral Perez, you want to know what Haral Perez batted in August?
You're cutting ahead, but let's hear it. I want to say I'm pretty sure it's like 360 something. I was checking the other day.
It is 340
Okay.
And that is his best month by over 100 percentage points. His best month prior to that was 227.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, man. He mashed. That was one of the next guys we're going to get to because he's been really good. I think Raul Perez has earned himself a little chance to be a part of the Birmingham playoff run here. I think he's going to finish out the last week in Winston probably just because it's only 1 week at this point. But I think Raul Perez should be slotted right into that Birmingham team for the playoff run here, even though I'm not sure even where he'd play exactly because there's a lot. The team is really good right now. But I think Raul deserves to get a shot to finish out the season with that Birmingham team and make that playoff run with them potentially.
Definitely. I mean, I feel like he's sort of beat High A. Like he's not really challenged.
He's figured himself out for sure.
Yeah.
One more hitter to mention from the Birmingham levels, Caden Connor. Caden Connor had a really nice month. This is a guy who's been bounced around a little bit. He went up to Charlotte to just fill a game at one point or fill a roster spot, really. But in the month of August for Caden Connor, it's a 779 OPS in the month, eight doubles. He's walked more than he struck out, which is always great to see from guys at that level. So another guy who had a good month. And then in Winston, which you already got us going on, the other hitter to mention is Sammy Zavala. Zavala is been really good, man. And you've always been higher on Zavala than I have been as just a profile and just where he's at. And, you know, I have to remind myself he's only 21 and he just turned 21 this summer because it definitely at times last year I was like, okay, there's really not much development right now from Zavala. You're not seeing the steps taken. The last month or two, we have seen some massive steps taken in Zavala's second full season at the high level. And you know, in August, it was 296, 395, 408 for an 803 OPS in the month of August, 15 walks to 14 strikeouts in the month, 7 extra base hits. Some really good, development the past 2 months, frankly. That's even the past 3 months for Zavala, honestly. It's been an 800 OPS hitter for 3 months straight now.
Yeah, I mean, I've always believed in Zavala just because I believed in the youth and the tools. Like there were signs there that showed that he could hold his own against players his own age, and he was 19 in High A last year. Like as young as we talked about as we talk about Caleb Bonnemer getting to High A as a 19-year-old, Sammy Zavala spent all of last year as a 19-year-old in High A, and yeah. Like I think that the tools are there for him to become a big league outfielder. And, you know, it's been just consistent improvement year or week over week and month over month, especially in the last three. You know, you mentioned the 15 to 14 strikeout or walk to strikeout ratio. There was a week or there was a month, the first month of the season in April, 26 strikeouts to 9 walks. Like it's very much improving from the start of the year to the end of the year. And, you know, you hope that he can ride this out and go into 2026 looking the same. And like, this is a floor. We're not like, this isn't just a hot streak. This is a floor to build off of.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm definitely with you there. I think it's fun to see. It's fun to see just the step taken by him for sure. And then the last guy offensively to mention in Birmingham or in Winston before we get to another pitcher is Caleb Bonnemer, obviously. Caleb Bonnemer, I don't think we need to talk on this too much because we've talked about it plenty. I posted something. He tears up Kannapolis to finish out his single A career, gets to Winston. He's 6-for-18 to start his career in Winston, 5 extra base hits his first week. In his first 5 games at the level, it's 5 extra base hits, 4 walks. This guy is putting some special swings together, man. Some of those home run swings he's putting together lately are just really effortless. Like his last homer yesterday, two-homer game yesterday, and the second one was just like, it literally looked like he just flicked his wrist. He saw a heater and he just flicked and it flew. You've seen a ton of doubles from him all season. He was leading. He was tied for first in the Carolina League in single A with doubles. Already 2 more doubles now in Winston. But more and more of those doubles are going to become homers, and I am fired up to see 2026 Caleb Bonnemer because he looks like he can handle High A already. So we could, there's a world where he's 20 years old next season in Double A.
Yeah, I think that he's sort of pushing the agenda on what the organization has planned for him. I think that he's gone above and beyond that because at least for me, I did not see him getting to High A as a 19-year-old this year, and I did not expect him to post an 1100 OPS through his first week of action. So I'm very pleased by Caleb Bonnemer, and like you said, I think that there's a world where he's 20 years old in Double A next year, which is just crazy for the White Sox to have a draft pick that works out. Like
We will see. Yeah. We'll see. But yes, very encouraging stuff. Last things to mention in Winston, Christian Hopper has found his groove in Winston for sure. Dominated Kannapolis, obviously had some ups and downs in Winston when he got there, has had his fair share of here and there, just command being spotty at times. But, you know, while being limited on innings, to take that, you know, into reference there, he, you know, it's in August for Hopper, six starts, 23 and a third, you know, very limited innings, 23 and a third at 1.93 ERA, 31 strikeouts to 10 walks. Christian Hopper looks like he's got his rhythm down in Winston-Salem, and I think he'll probably still start the year there next year, but I think he'll be in Birmingham definitely at some point next season and could be sooner than we expect even.
Yeah, you know, like similarly to Caleb Bonnemer, I think Christian Hopper is pushing the organization's agenda on him because, I mean, he's just done nothing but dominate this year, and you know, if the velo gains are real and the strikes are real, I think that there's a very real world. There's a very real world where Christian Hopper is the top pitching prospect in the White Sox system come 2027. After Noah Schultz gets called up, after Hagen Smith gets called up, I think that Christian Hopper is a very, very good pitching prospect that a lot of White Sox fans need to get familiar with, because he's coming and he's gonna be good.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Also, just shout out to the Winston bullpen in general. That bullpen, Winston has figured out between Phil Fox, Carson Jacobs, Jonathan Clark, Jack Young. It goes on, but in general, that bullpen has been very good over the past month. Last particular name to mention in Kannapolis is Ellie Brown. Ellie Brown was one of the recent draft picks. Definitely been a slow start for a lot of the draft picks. Kyle Odis has had his good moments in Winston, but in general, a lot of the draft picks are kind of still finding their groove. But Ellie Brown, in his first 21 professional games in single A, hitting .311 with a .416 on base percentage. You're not seeing a lot of power from him, but you know, in that first 21 games, 13 walks to only 14 strikeouts, 10 stolen bases, and a .416 on base percentage for Ellie Brown, who has been the most, you know, initially impressive of the recent draft picks as the 12th rounder from the White Sox this year.
Yeah, I think that I don't like to take draft year results too heavily. Like, I think that, you know, the on paper results are good, yes, but like, this is the longest season of their lives, especially right. The college draft picks. So like, a lot of the guys, they're worn out, they're tired. But you know, it's great to see Brown producing at the level that he is, because I mean, 13 walks to 14 strikeouts and 10 for 10 on stolen bases. Yeah, that's encouraging. Really good.
Yeah, definitely encouraging from a guy who was one of the more interesting later picks in the draft by the White Sox as well. So that's all we've got today. We're at about an hour. We did a bunch of talking today. We went through a lot of stuff. We're going to keep doing this. This is great. We got a couple more interviews coming up. If you haven't yet, make sure you check out the Sam Antonacci interview from last week, one of our favorite prospects in the system. He was good to kind of just check in and just hear about kind of his mindset, where he's been going through his progression this year. Going to have a few more draft pick interviews coming up. I got a couple guys who I'm talking to from this recent draft class who I'm looking forward to getting to know a little bit and just kind of seeing and hearing about their draft process and now getting settled into professional baseball. We'll be back next week on the roundup. Might be a little bit later in the week next week. We got some various traveling different commitments on my end. So I'm going to be a little in and out, but we're always going to get you an episode each week, even if it's a little bit different timing. But yeah, this has been a good one, Dylan. We'll talk to you guys next week on the roundup.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.